The ESL Rochester Fringe Festival, the most anticipated festival in the region, will once again excite audiences with nearly 650 performances September 9th through the 20th. From comedy, dance, and theater to jaw-dropping spectacles across 39 venues all around Rochester. Don't miss amazing performances in the Spiegel Tent, including the world premiere of Cirque du Fringe Claws Out, Shot Sphere, Kids Fringe, and more. And direct from Italy, Sphere, a mind-blowing outdoor spectacle, free at Parcel 5, September 19th and 20th. RochesterFringe.com.
Let's take a minute to talk about Joe Bean Coffee, my go-to for great beans here in Rochester. I'm Chris Lindstrom, host of the Food About Town podcast and co-founder of Lunchador, and I regularly brew their coffee at home. A recent favorite of mine is the natural process Colombian Finca Buena Vista coffee from Edwin Zambrano. This coffee won a 2024 Good Food Award, and I can't help but agree with that assessment. My brews have been full with fruity flavors of pineapple, strawberry, and orange, and each cup has brightened my morning. Next time you need some beans, head over to Joe Bean's Roastery at 565 Blossom Road in Rochester, or shop online at joebeanroasters.com. For our loyal listeners, save 15% off your next order at joebeanroasters.com with code LUNCHADOR. You can also subscribe to Joe Bean's Perpetual Joy and receive freshly roasted beans on your schedule, and never be without great coffee again. Joe Bean is more than just coffee. It's a community, a commitment, and a cup full of care. Music means it's time for another episode of Just Can't Not. I'm your host, Chris Lindstrom. This is part of our preview series of podcasts for the ESL Rochester Fringe Festival happening September 9th to 20th in scenic downtown Rochester, New York. You can go to rochesterfringe.com to get tickets for all the events. Make sure to get the app so you can get stuff on the fly. It's a great idea. I love that they came out with that this year. And tonight, I have two guests. Guests, why don't you introduce yourselves, please?
I am Scott Fibush.
I'm Lisa Fibush.
Yeah, and they are here to talk about their Fringe events. So the first one is Comedy on Deck Well Seasoned, which will be held on Friday, September 12th at 9 p.m. and Friday and Saturday, September 20th at 9 p.m. Tickets are $15 on rochesterfringe.com. And again, at the School of the Arts in the club area. This is a great venue, and it's so intimate and fantastic. I went... it was the last year or the year before, and I absolutely loved the space it was in. Such a perfect venue for what you guys do.
It really is.
It is great for comedy. We've done comedy there a couple of years running, and you get people packed into that room. It seats, I guess, what, about 50 people?
Something give or take. Like that. Yeah, this is our third Fringe show. We've always been in that space.
Yeah,
and it feels like a comedy club, basically.
Yeah, it's a tight comedy club, too, and you really feel the audience. There's no escaping the audience in a room that's, you're on top, right? The first row is you're like this table away from the comedian.
Mere inches away.
Yes.
It is a delight, and you really get that feeling of, hey, you know when your stuff's hitting and when it's not. There's no doubt.
Which you don't always in comedy. I mean, I've been in a lot of rooms where either people are way on the other side or there just aren't enough people. And if you don't have that critical mass, you do not get the laughs.
Well, and also, like, I've seen both of you, like, doing a little more, like, while you're on the road, traveling and going and visiting comedy clubs over the last, you know, last year and two. And it's, like, what a delight to go visit and see the different versions of clubs and see the different layouts and how they feel.
Definitely. And there's differences also with each city. There's some regional humor. Demographics are a little bit different. Again, it depends on the audience that you have, because if you have a very small crowd, you'll have people laughing. But that's the nice thing about performing in a space like we are at Fringe is it's packed. Laughter begets laughter. If other people are with you are laughing, you're going to join in. So it's having that crowd really does help us.
You mentioned that you're headed to Alberta soon, and I was actually there a year ago, and I did some comedy in Edmonton and in Calgary. And in Edmonton, I did one of my usual opening lines where I talk about how my daughter at that point had just turned 21 and had just had her very first drink ever.
Yeah.
Which normally gets a knowing laugh. nobody was laughing. I thought about it for a second. I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. This is Canada. Never mind. That's 18 here, right? Or maybe 14. Then I got the laugh. But it is. You get those sort of different comedy sensibilities. I was down in Austin, and you know, it's a very sophisticated comedy town. There are like six clubs that are all lined up along what they call Dirty Six there. And you get people who are just so into it. And I wish we had more of that here.
Yes. There's a lot of Rochester comics who've actually moved to Austin for the scene.
Yeah, and it's really changed so much in the last 2 years, and now it's become a hotspot, I think, for one, a certain kind of comedy, but I think generally comedy has, you know, whenever there's a density of opportunity, more than just, you know, the demo that specifically moved there for, you know, free speech and anti-woke stuff, it's less, you know, when there's the density, you'll get the rest of the comedians too, not just that. Because you can easily stereotype a town for that, mm-hmm. and fairly enough for what it is. But I think there's also, you're going to get people that just want stage time. And when there's that many in town, there's more stage time available, which is the thing you need.
Absolutely. And for us especially, because what we do is a little bit off the mainstream of what a lot of Rochester comedy is, and we love a lot of the comics that we work with. We kind of have developed a reputation as Rochester's comedy mom and dad over the last 6 years yes. of doing this. Which
I think by virtue of being our age.
But it is. I mean, a lot of the comics literally could be our kids. They're in their 20s or young 30s, and they talk about the things that people in their 20s and younger 30s talk about, and that's great. You know, we are, as we say, a little more well-seasoned. We've been around the block a few times. We have kids. I do a lot of comedy about our kids. Lisa does a little.
Yeah, well,
that's one of the differences in our style. Is family is fair game for him, and usually I don't put that in my routines.
Well, I think it's also, it's a different kind of, you know, it's a different kind of set, right? When you're choosing to reveal different parts of you, and there has to be a comfortability. If you're doing it with, you know, any reticence or any, you know, hesitation, it's not the right thing, because you need to have that comfort in the version of honesty you're bringing to mm-hmm. the stage.
Yes.
And it's always a version of honesty, not, you know, dead honesty is part of it sometimes. We talked about that in one of our earlier preview podcasts for, I think there was one about, you know, an OCD comic did just doing a whole hour on that. And then there was a lady who's doing more of a kind of like a one person show theater performance about called the Bipolar Coaster. So both of them had very interesting ways of talking about things that were very honest, that were a core part of them. And they're both tackling it in very different ways. And I find the approach to doing that stuff, when you have the vulnerability about talking about family and talking about that stuff, you know, there's always foibles and the light stuff, but, you know, bringing those honest moments too. And that's how the lighter things often hit harder too.
Well, and sure. it helps, I think, to have more things to talk about, to have experienced some of this. And I am, you know, some of the best comedy lessons that I've gotten from the people that I trust, you know, that you can't fake it, that if there's not some piece of honesty in what you're doing, it's not going to come across and get you laughs.
Yeah. Although I did have to learn that Scott and I both are former journalists, and I was actually a copy editor, so accuracy was always first and foremost. And when I first started doing routines, they were a little bit wordy because in detail somebody was like, you can just say last week. I'm like, but it wasn't last week. It was 6 months ago. And so I actually had to teach myself, there you can use dramatic license. It's you're being honest. It happened. You do not have to be 100% accurate.
It's the accuracy of the intent and the feeling of the story, and really sometimes the action of the story. A little bit of apocryphal choices. You know, there's nothing yes. wrong with that in that case. What I was kind of intrigued with is, so this is something that, you know, I know both of you have, you know, really curated, right? The performers that are one doing, you know, comedy on the deck at the house mm-hmm. and doing the Fringe show. So, like, you know, Lisa, when you're going through the process of figuring out who's going to be on this show with you, is this more of a panel? Is this more like you have, like, you know, people coming in as opening acts? How are you thinking about this now? Or is this more like a wide-ranging panel of comedy?
The past 2 years, it was a panel of comedy. The first year that we did the show, we left it to the audience. Every deck mic that we did, we had people vote for their top three comics, and whoever got the most votes, they were in the show. It was a lot of people. It was too many people. And then last year, we decided we'll just pick our favorites. The only stipulation was they had to have performed on our deck at some point.
I like that, too.
Yes.
It gives you a... there's a certain level of confidence you have where you don't have to think about it too much.
Right.
You have at least, hey, you know, they've been, essentially it's vetting.
Mm-hmm.
It's the self-vetting that
yes.
you've already done.
Right. But this year.
Yeah, I'm seeing this is different.
Yeah. This year, Scott said, you know, why don't we feature ourselves more because it's our show, which is fair. And he's right because most of the places around town we do, all of the mics are 4 or 5 minutes. Even if we are in a show someplace that's, I think the most we've ever had is 10, maybe 15 minutes. We haven't gotten to stretch ourselves with a show. So that's how we decided to do it. But we did decide, yes, we still wanted a host and we still wanted to have an opener. The way we picked those is we tried to give it to people who don't necessarily get bookings all of the time, but we think are very funny. And we also picked people who we think are smart comics.
Yeah. So I know, I think the last time I went to the Fringe event, Marty was performing. I've
yes.
seen, you know, somebody also, I like that you're getting different vibes too.
Mm-hmm. And they're also, all of them are, you know, as we say, well-seasoned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And well, you know, Marty's got some years.
Marty, mm-hmm. Marty will tell you right away, he is 68. He started doing comedy when he was, I think, 63.
Yeah, and I gotta say, and I was pretty impressed. Just like, hey, he has a very distinct voice.
Very yep. much so.
In the way he performs and everything. And I think that's part of the core is like knowing yourself. If you don't know yourself at 68, I think something also might not be quite there. Like,
it comes from having those life experiences. And he's fascinating. He lived in San Francisco. He was a roadie. You name a rock band that played San Francisco, he was probably up there with them.
I didn't know about
point.
The roadie part.
Yeah.
I know that he's seen pretty much any act worth seeing, he's pretty much seen them.
And he spent some time in Malta.
Oh, geez.
This
wow.
past year and became a comedy sensation in Malta.
I mean, who amongst us hasn't become a comedy sensation in a small island style country?
Honestly, any chance you have to, you know, to break out of that pack and get seen. But he is fantastic. He is hosting for us on our first show. That is coming up this Friday night. And then on with him is Jessica DeMart,
yeah.
Who we knew. She was in a comedy class with Lisa.
Yes, I met her when we took the comedy writing class at the Focus, but she was very, she's a little younger than we are, but she's not the 20-something comic. And again, she's married and
yeah,
I think she has pets, so she has material too. Because with all the young people, I have to share a story about our daughter. We, this is like 6 years ago, pre-pandemic, one of the comics decided she wanted to host a mic on Thanksgiving night just to have a place where everybody's sick of their relatives, they can get out of there, and
yeah.
we signed up for it. And our daughter decided, sure, she'd come along with us. And after about the fourth or fifth comic, they were all men in their late 20s, early to mid-30s, she leaned over to me, she said, do all of them do jokes about drugs and sex?
Yeah. Yeah,
basically.
Yeah, kind of. It was, so yeah, there's a, but so the nice thing about Jessica is she's very funny. Her material is not anything like you're going to hear at the open mics.
Yeah. And as somebody who I've actually, you know, hung out with socially in the past, because I've known her husband for a long mm-hmm. time.
Cool.
You know, him and I have been, you know, friends for, you know, 10 years, not like all the time, but, you know, somebody who I've a great rapport with over the years, and we find out socially a little bit. She's just cool people too.
She is.
She really is.
She was also a semifinalist in the Rochester's Funniest Competition.
Really?
Yeah,
over
awesome.
At the Carlson, as is actually one of our featured performer for our second show on the 20th, made it all the way to the finals, Lisa Vanderhoff, which was amazing. I am so proud of her because she had, I don't think she'll mind our sharing this, she had really bad stage fright. She was nervous just about getting up on our deck.
Yes.
And then she has just blossomed, and it is fantastic. So we're so excited to have her. And then opening or hosting rather on that show is the youngest, I think, of all of our comics.
Sean Hennessy. I think he's 30, but he's in his 30s.
Yeah.
I believe. I think he's that. And Lisa Vanderhoff, I also met in the comedy writing class, and she always had really funny material, but she just used to be very insecure about sharing it. How do you get it down? And she's just, she, for comedy at the Carlson, the first round, it has to be 4 minutes, and she just absolutely killed. She's figured it all out now.
Well, I love that too, right? Like when you're talking about that certain kind of confidence, right? You know, I can't tell you how many people have walked in and just in like in our studio here and just been a mess, been a wreck. And how interesting it is when it was actually in one of the recent Behind the Glass episodes, you know, the guest came in and she was really nervous coming in. And I told her the same thing I tell everybody. I'm like, I'm telling you this because it's going to happen and you don't have to worry about it. Like, you're going to start off quiet. You're going to get louder. But that's the reps, right? You get to tell your story. You get to do your routine. And the more times you get to do it, the more times you get to learn about the pauses, mm-hmm. learn about intonation, learn about reading the audience, learn about those little things. You know, that momentum in the way you're talking, that wave of information, raising and lowering your voice to control how people are feeling. Like, it's stuff that, yes. you know, you two take for granted with, you know,
I guess we do.
With controlling, you know, controlling for public radio, controlling for a different style. There's a specific tone and it's a choice that you make.
So here's the thing. And I do actually, I have, you know, each of, when you're putting together a 15 or a 20 minute set, you know, the way you do it is you take your 5 minute sets that you've done over the years and honed, and you use them as the building blocks and you figure out how to stack them where the transitions are. One of the sets that I do is about my 20 years of using the public radio voice.
Yeah.
And you know the public radio voice. And then I do a bit of crowd work where I get people to give me things that would have gotten me fired if I had said them in the public radio voice. And I've got a little new material that goes into there too this year about where public radio is now and some of the desperation. But I think one of the things, you know, having come to comedy very late, I've been doing it for 6 years, I was in my late 40s when I was doing it, is that in some ways I think it almost doesn't do me any favors that I am so comfortable in front of a microphone. I want to have a little bit more nervous energy, a little bit more adrenaline going up there, you know, even when it's this whole different experience of doing it in front of a live crowd instead of just in a studio.
Well, I find that I was kind of thinking the same thing because there's a certain, you know, that nervous action that is hard. You can't replicate that unless you're actually nervous. You can't replicate that. And there's sometimes that little bit of tentativeness that opens up. And then sometimes you burst out in a way that's hard to do when you're feeling like you're in control, mm-hmm. Which I find very interesting. But that's kind of what I wanted to talk about was, you know, formulating a longer set. So you guys are doing what, 20s? 15, 20s?
We're dividing it up. So if you come this weekend, it'll be me doing the 15-minute set and then Lisa closing out with 20.
Awesome.
And then the following Saturday, the 20th, we reverse it. She does 15, I do 20. And we're doing a little crossover together, which we have never done before.
Until last night. Yeah, two Monday open mic hosts, we asked them ahead, can we go up together and practice sort of for a transition for our show? And they said yes. And thankfully, the crowd liked it too. We got some very good feedback.
Yeah, so this is your classic Stiller and Mira, you know, comedy duo.
Except didn't they always performed as a team, right?
Yeah, the other thing a lot always, of the time.
Because I want to stress to everybody, we are not a duo. We don't write together. Our styles are quite different. Our voices are a bit different. Usually he's doing his stand-up, I'm doing my stand-up, but we're a couple and we often perform on the same show.
Yeah.
That's how we're a comedy couple, but we're not a duo, except for the little bit you'll see in this.
Yeah. It is a little bit of a challenge too, because like that bouncing that you do as people in real life is not the same bouncing that you're doing on stage.
Right. And, you know, we were figuring it out last night before we went up at Boulder. And it's funny because our styles are also a little bit different. I am a little bit more off the cuff. I do a little bit more improvisational work as I go. Lisa, I think, is a little bit more scripted, tends to hone her stuff over and over again.
Yes.
A little bit more. And so she was a little bit more concerned about, okay, which bits are we doing? But it turns out that we've had bits that each of us has done that we were able to turn from solo bits into some give and take, and it still felt authentic.
Yeah, and what I was kind of intrigued with is when you're stretching out to 20, right? Because that would be the longest like planned set you've done is 20?
So far, yes.
It's a big jump, right? You know, from the 4 to the 10 to 20, it's a big jump because then there's that little in-between time where you might be setting them up for the next thing without them knowing you're setting them up for the next thing. How is learning about doing those like transitions in the longer sets? How has the process been? Because it is a learning experience from doing the 4 minutes, because you can just do hammer, 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 hammer in 4 minutes.
Right.
But learning how to set them up for the next thing over that journey is a different skill.
And you do have to write transitions. That's something that's been a little challenging for me, is trying to figure out how to transition between the sets, because a 4 or 5 minute set, I'm going to have, I need to make sure I have a strong closer. I don't necessarily have to have that when I'm going to the next bit. So I'm focused less on, do I have this final punchline, or more just how do I segue from this topic to the next topic?
Yeah, because you could do just straight bits for 20,
mm-hmm.
but that's a very different thing than stories.
Right.
And how do you ramp up and down and give them that feel that it's a complete thought? So and does it have a theme?
Yeah. I should plug here also, we are also for the third year, not consecutive, but third year total, we are part of
it's
a story.
It's the third year that they've done it. They were in the fest, in the Fringe Fest last year, so 2023, 2024, and now.
Nice.
No.
I'm sorry, 2022, 2023, and then now.
And
yes.
Now. So it's a show called Catharsis Time. It is moving this year. Traditionally, I think it's been at Muck. This year, it is also at Club Soda.
Actually, it was at Muck the first year, Focus the second.
That's right, it was a Focus the second year.
Nice.
And conveniently, it is right before us on the 20th. So you can get tickets for both and hang around and do both. And that's the one that we're in. But our good friends, Matt Moore and Sarah Zavacki Moore, Matt did theater for a long time at Roberts Wesleyan. Sarah is actually, she's a counselor and a therapist, but they started this a few years ago. And the idea was, have people come up and tell their most embarrassing stories, dig stuff out of old diary entries. The one that I did 2 years ago was reading pretty much verbatim from the incredibly emotional letters that I sent home from summer camp when I was 10.
Ooh, nice.
Begging my parents to bring me home because I was so miserable. And of course, I ended up loving it.
How many times did you quote Alan Sherman in that thing?
It was...
None.
But he anticipated exactly where I was going.
Right. But it was the same story.
Lisa's stories, for whatever reason, she's taking a break this year. They're normally about her throwing up.
No, the second year it wasn't. The second year it was about getting lost. Okay. Remember?
Oh, that's right.
Yes. Yeah, the first year that I told the story, I spent my junior year in France, and the family who was hosting me threw a dinner party, and I threw up in the middle of it. That was my first catharsis time.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. I talked her out of doing barfing again this year.
I have another barfing story, but I did tell some. But no, what was very cool, the previous year, 2023, we both had Paul McCartney stories revolving around Paul McCartney, so that was kind of fun. And we did them back to back. Do you want to share what you did? Or
well, so mine was about this incredible mishap the year before my junior year of college, when there was this girl that I had a crush on, and I drove back from Rochester to Boston to take her to a Paul McCartney concert, and ended up crashing my mother's car in the middle of Waltham, Massachusetts. We never made it to the concert. She ended up dumping me because she was seeing somebody else the whole time. We're still friends 30 years later, and she actually ended up introducing us. And then Lisa's was about her mad directional skills.
Said very ironically, yes. Paul McCartney was doing the inaugural concert at Citi Field. Both our kids are Beatles fans because they didn't have a choice, because I started playing the music for them in their cribs. So I thought, hey, it's going to be really fun. I'll take my almost 6-year-old daughter to see Paul at Citi Field. And I didn't have a smartphone at that point, so, and I didn't have a GPS. Was Google Maps even that How much was it around? Because it was 2009. It might have existed. So
the MapQuest may have existed.
Yes. I was sitting on my laptop guiding her by phone after she had somehow made it from Rockland County through Manhattan, the Bronx. No, she didn't get
to the Bronx. No, what happened? The thing is, what happened is
she got to Staten Island. Somehow.
I got to Staten Island, and thankfully didn't go to Jersey because I saw that New Jersey was the next exit. I said, okay, I got to call Scott, but he'd given me directions, but I couldn't really look at them while I was driving, and I was trying to remember them and sort of going by instinct, and my instinct wasn't really good.
You know you've made a wrong turn when your car ends up on the Staten Island Ferry.
Yes.
I did not get on the boat, but...
But our comedy style for both of us is very storytelling-oriented. We're not big, you know, joke people. There are comics in town. There's one comic named Nell Russ, who we love, and that's all that she does, is just one-liner. It's very kind of Stephen Wright-esque. Just punchline after punchline after punchline. It's fantastic. She's great at it. It's not us.
Yeah. Yeah. If Stephen Wright were a young woman, he'd be Nell.
I mean, that's what a great legacy, too. Like, you know, when you're talking about some of the great joke writers, you know, of generations, right? You know, it was Stephen Wright, and then it was, you know, Mitch Hedberg.
Yes.
And now what you see in, like, you know, what Todd Barry's doing, you know, it's just these joke after joke after joke. And it's just like, oh, my God, how consistently fantastic it is to watch somebody like that just basically hammer you the whole time with just material over and over again. It's amazing stuff to see when somebody can do it, but man, I would like memorizing that many jokes is just crazy. And I'm trying to think of the British guy's name off the top of my head. He does a lot of panel shows.
Mm-hmm.
He has that very distinct laugh. But, you know, there's the guys who
Jimmy Carr?
Jimmy Carr,
Jimmy
yeah.
Carr.
Yes.
You know, just these legendary...
I was
going to
say, very distinct renovated hairline also.
But, yeah, very, very 2025 hairline. Shout out to John Cena, shout out to Jimmy Carr. new hair. I chose the Scott Feibusch route.
Yep. It's like comedy. We are both authentic with where our hairlines have gone.
You know what? It was one of those things that's either like... And what I've started to tell people is like, hey, if you see it going, like, do one or the other. Mm-hmm. Like, go get the meds, go do plugs. The plugs are way better than they used to be. Or give up and kill it and save all the haircut dollars. Like, one of the two. Invest or cut the haircut dollars off. It's a lot cheaper.
The fun thing, though, about the memorization is that, you know, when you have been doing some of those same five-minute building blocks now, and we wouldn't have done this 3 or 4 years ago. We couldn't have done this 3 or 4 years ago. But I think now we have those building blocks. And you know, I've gotten the chance occasionally, how do I build these together into a 10 or a 12 or a 15? And I feel now, you know, as I'm sitting down, I'm actually trying to map out, okay, what goes in the 20? There's still stuff I'm leaving out. And I feel pretty good about that, actually.
Well, it's kind of that, it's that thing when the more you do it, the more you're feeling like, you know, like I remember seeing you guys pop up at like, you know, Comedy at the Carlson, you know, probably closer to the beginning, you know, 6 years, you mm-hmm. know, 5-6 years ago. I think it was right, you know, during the pandemic when like the first, you know, like pop-ups started to happen there. And I remember going and seeing you both, and it was like, yeah, I see where this is going. But you also know like what you're doing there. You had the bones of developing your voice, developing your confidence on stage. When you think about like the journey from then to now, do you see half hours? Do you see like wanting to really stretch into the next level of doing the half hour, which is the first step towards doing the longer thing? Because mm-hmm. a half hour is a way different thing than 20.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you want to go there?
I would love to do a half hour if anybody would book me.
I don't know.
I mean, I don't know if I could do it right now this second, but I could certainly work my way up to it, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. I would love to get there. I'm actually just kind of to see how it works. You know, I have friends from around the country who don't get to see us perform. And one of them was actually my former news photographer back in my TV news days here. And I messaged him the other night. I said, look, how badly do you want to see my video? And do you want to see it badly enough that if I sent you a bunch of camera views of the show, you'd edit it together for me? And thankfully, and he owes me because he is a model train guy and he corrupted my son very badly a few years ago.
Oh, yes.
We could do, I did a half an hour on model trains when I talked to Otto von Drack, who
we
does
know
the
Otto
Rush.
Von Drack. Yep.
So I did a half an hour talking about model trains because my dad is a wild collector of pre-war model trains, and he will be in scenic York, Pennsylvania in early October, going to visit. So no, I'd love to talk more about that.
Bring Eli in here, because he will talk your ears off.
Oh yes.
About trains, about presidential history. Like every 17-year-old boy, one of his life goals, and we're doing this tomorrow night in Buffalo, is we are taking the Teddy Roosevelt inaugural site bus tour of the William McKinley assassination sites.
I mean, the amount of what do they call those now? Was it the low fade? You know, the modern haircut. Just all those haircuts ready to. They're lined up outside. It's the most important thing for all teenage boys. Oh, Teddy Roosevelt tour.
Absolutely, not just but even more so William McKinley.
Oh, I mean. McKinley's so in with the kids.
We went to see the Warren G. Harding site. He took us on this presidential tour of the Midwest over the summer.
Yeah.
We worked in the Warren G. Harding presidential site in beautiful Marion, Ohio. We learned about Warren Harding's history. Do you know that he was a passionate lover of waffles?
What a delightful fact to learn about a president.
This is something I have not been able to figure out exactly how to get it into the show yet. I'm still working on exactly how to do this, but he had, and I have to find this for you, this amazing quote, about his waffle addiction. And they do, yes. By the way, they show you. When you go into his house, they show you his waffle maker. They're very proud of it. Florence Harding.
Nice cast iron.
Made
sure.
The, absolutely.
Yes. All right, and so big waffles. We're not talking a little teeny Eggo size or anything. These are great, big, full-size Belgian waffles.
These are presidential waffles.
Yes.
So play along. I mean, they're not the ones you get. Have you ever been to a motel in Texas and you go to the breakfast buffet and you get the Texas-shaped waffles? These are not those. Neither are they Ohio-shaped. But here is, you got to do the math. Follow along on the math here. Warren G. Harding. You eat the first 14 waffles without syrup, but with lots of butter. Then you put syrup on the next 9.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And the last half dozen, you eat simply swimming in syrup.
Mm.
Eaten that way, waffles never hurt anybody.
No.
From the man who died at 58 of heart attack.
Yes.
I can't imagine why.
Yeah. It's a mystery.
Every balanced diet, I'm pretty sure they say this in the advertisements, it's part of the food pyramid, every balanced diet needs 29 consecutive waffles eaten.
Absolutely.
You know, I think it's recommended by all doctors, and I know that Warren G. Harding's doctor said he was the healthiest president that had ever lived.
Where have we heard that before?
Oh, yes.
I don't know
that
if we can,
one actually, I
don't know if we can get
sure.
it on camera here, but this is Warren G. Harding's waffle maker.
Yes.
Ooh, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
I have to say, good. I think his doctor was pretty honest, but when I first saw that quote, I was just trying to imagine... I don't know how I could get through the... I can't imagine eating 14 waffles. I get full on 2. I'm like, what did... He was a much bigger guy than I am, but still I'm like, how long do you have to go without eating to be able to fit 14 waffles?
I'm going
to
say he was a man of very specific appetites, and at least his appetites didn't have him going to any islands or getting arrested for anything.
He had
There's no felonies eating 29 waffles consecutively, Scott.
He had a second family, though. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah.
Oh, see, I like this guy more and more.
I have either just spoiled you on Warren G. Harding or maybe... But where this all started back before Warren G. Harding and waffles and trains is that my friend Kevin, bless him, out in Colorado, will, I hope, be editing together a bunch of this. And we'll kind of see how it hangs as, like, 20 minutes of video and
that's
awesome. You know, not necessarily to put out there anywhere except to send to some friends, but maybe just to get us to that next level. And there are, you know, because we are storytellers and because we are honest about what we're telling, there are all kinds of linked threads. You know, a lot of my material is about being a dad in my mid-50s. And so a lot of the different pieces of what I do all relate to that. Lisa's first set that she ever started out with was about turning 50.
Yes. Yeah. It wasn't the first one I ever wrote, but it was the first one I ever performed. It's the second one I ever wrote.
Yeah. And you know what? I think that, you know, when you're talking about, hey, this is, we know where we are in our comedy journey. We also know that, hey, we are, you know, we're performing services for the community by offering space for people to perform. You know, we're having the ability for other people to come in on, you know, your Fringe event to have other people join is a testament to doing this the right way and contributing to the community. Not, it's not just being a part of it, it's contributing. It's that's how you really become a part of something, is by doing and by showing up. And what everybody can do is show up to the events. So the events are on, again, Friday, September 12th at 9 p.m., Saturday, the 20th at 9 p.m., both at the School of the Arts, Club Soda, right in there. It's a great venue for comedy. It's really a fun show, and getting to see, you know, these expanded sets, what a great opportunity to see it for the first time, the longer sets from Scott and Lisa Feibusch. Before we close out, any other plugs that people need to know before we finish?
Yes, so, I want to make sure. Oh, yeah.
Okay, catharsis time.
Yes, yeah. When you were talking about some of the shows where they're talking about very deeply personal, revealing things, Catharsis Time is also that show, but it's not one person. It's going to be six or seven people in a night doing five-minute stories. So you're going to have some pathos. You're going to have humor. You're going to have emotional connections. And those shows are Saturday, September 13th at 8 and Saturday, September 20th at 8. We're in the September 20th one, so you can come see us and then just stay for our show.
It sounds like a great evening to finish out the Fringe Festival.
Or come to both, because they're both overlapping but not completely identical casts. There are some great people in there. Penny Sterling, everybody in town knows Penny, of course. Penny, I believe, is in both of them this year. It'll be fun to see what she has to talk about.
Awesome.
There's kind of a tight cast of players that go back. Matt wrote, he's a great writer, during the pandemic when Fringe was virtual, we got to do some Zoom shows with him that started with William Shakespeare's Sharknado.
No, that was the second one.
That was the second one.
Yeah. That was a blast.
Yeah. Oh, you saw that.
Yeah, I love that one.
Yeah, Matt is the one who got us into Fringe because he put us in his virtual cast. The first one he did was Zoom Your Own Adventure, where it was a play about getting through the pandemic with people who you don't necessarily agree with politically, but there were points where you had to stop and vote for which scene you wanted to see next.
Oh.
And we actually based that. Everybody remembers the Choose Your Own Adventure books. And what inspired him is, do you remember The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt?
Yeah, of course.
Do you remember how they made a movie that was a Choose Your Own Adventure style?
Mm-hmm.
And I was telling Matt about that and saying, I wonder how you could do that on stage. That would be really interesting if you could do that. And then he got that idea and he wrote Zoom Your Own Adventure.
Fun. So yeah, definitely go, you know, see the show before. You said it was Catharsis?
Catharsis Time.
Both on the 13th and the 20th. And then, Lisa, I know you've got your radio show still going.
I do. It's entering its 10th. Yeah, we just celebrated 9 years in July.
Number nine?
Yes.
Number nine?
Yes. That's number the song. I only play that it's on Mono Halloween Sky. When I'm doing scary music.
Oh, that's awesome.
You still, even if it's mono, you got to do the stereo pan back and
that's
forth
true.
Anyway. It's just, it's tradition.
I have to do my post stereo version of this.
Yes.
So thank you so much for coming over. Make sure you go to rochesterfringe.com to get your tickets for these events and many others. If you don't want to get a ticket for anything, you can also come to the Lunch at Our Podcast Network event on September the 13th at 3 o'clock. We're at the Bausch & Lomb building. Of the downtown branch of the public library, doing a free show where the hosts will have no idea what they are talking about until we start.
Fine.
And it's going to be improv, and we're hoping we don't fall on our faces. It's going to be a blast.
I would take that challenge sometime, I'm just saying.
Oh, it's going to be so much fun. So, Scott and Lisa, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you so much.
I will see everybody out on the Fringe, and we will see you in downtown Rochester, New York, for the ESL Rochester Fringe Festival, September 9th to the 20th.
This has been a presentation of the Lunch and More Podcast Network.
This really is going to be a magical comedy tour.
Hey, this is Paulie Guglielmo, and if you'd like to hear the behind-the-scenes stories of some of your favorite small businesses in Rochester, join me for one-on-one interviews with the entrepreneurs behind those businesses. It's the Paulie Guglielmo Show podcast, and it comes out every Sunday morning at 8 a.m. right here on the Lunchador Podcast Network.
Hello, hello, folks. My name is Magnus. I am a host of The Mind of Magnus. It's a podcast where I focus on expanding my brain and bringing some awesome people along the way to help expand your brain. So I have some new seasons and some awesome new guests coming up this year. So join me. Send me some factoids if you have your own. I even have a call-in line. So check it out. Find me at mindofmagnus.com, wherever you get your Lunchador Podcast Network, which is everywhere.